So our next presentation, which will be our last presentation, is by Sana Shahimi. And Sana is a program manager with the Prevention Institute, which is a national nonprofit dedicated to advancing health and equity through a focus on primary prevention. And she's going to talk about communicating success and framing the accomplishments of community prevention. So let's welcome Sana.
How is everyone doing? So before I begin, I'll acknowledge the fact that I recognize some faces from this morning. I'm presenting similar messages. I'll try to add a twist to it to keep those of you that have heard some of this before in your seats nonetheless. And I want to acknowledge two of my former Prevention Institute colleagues that were part of the work that I'm sharing. I don't have any relationships to this close. So this is the last APHA session, and I know that people are thinking about what, you know, getting back to their real lives, and maybe some of you are from the East Coast, and you're thinking about how you're going to get back physically to your real lives. But I just want everyone to take a moment and reflect on the experiences that you've had at APHA, and on the things that you've learned, you know, the information that has been shared with you, the success stories that you have heard about, you know, different public health work, different projects. And then ask yourself, you know, how much of this information does the average person on the street know about? In terms of the outcomes of the kind of work that we're doing, people are shaking their heads like, yeah, very little, right? This is not what everyone, I don't know if the parade is over by now, but I'm sure that there's lots of people, you know, milling about outside. They're not really necessarily thinking about public health. People on the East Coast probably are, though, but that's because there's been, you know, a large natural disaster. So now public health is kind of top of mind. And I think that that's a recurring theme and problem, is that those of us that work in public health, we're so busy doing the work that needs to be done, doing it with, you know, not nearly the funding that we need to do it, that it's difficult to take the time to talk about the outcomes of the work and make sure that they're broadly understood, that the public understands the importance of certain public health investments, and that policymakers and decision makers, you know, those that are going to be making decisions about what programs to keep and what programs to cut, understand what's at stake. So that's really what I want to talk about. I want to talk about how we really communicate the effectiveness of the work that we're doing. And at Prevention Institute, we focus on community prevention, and that means that we focus on improving environments, you know, our neighborhoods, our workplaces, our schools, so that it's easier for us to be healthy and safe in the first place. And we do this work with a strong social justice and equity perspective, you know, while we realize that you know, that we all benefit from good health, we also know that there are certain communities that are really at a great disadvantage and continue, you know, have historically been at a disadvantage in terms of the resources and infrastructure available to them, and continue to be the sickest and suffer the most from kind of these structural inequities. So a powerful tool and often a free tool that we have at our disposal to get out our public health messages is the media. And the media is really one of our most effective ways for reaching the public and for reaching decision makers. Whether it's traditional print media or online media, I mean, in this current presidential election cycle, we've heard time and time again how the media is shaping the debate, and how that, you know, ultimately may end up impacting the outcome of the election. So we can't afford to ignore the media, because when we do, the issues that we care about are not going to be framed to our advantage. And, you know, I mean, part of what's difficult about the kind of work that we do, particularly if we're about prevention, if we're about preventing things from happening in the first place, is that when we're successful, we don't see the problems. So as you see on this slide, and this is referencing the fact that in the Affordable Care Act, there's the Prevention of Public Health Fund. So that's the part of the Affordable Care Act that invests money in public health programs like the community transformation grants. And as of July, that particular piece of funding had been up for cut or repeal or offset 33 times. And this article points out that part of that reason is that when public health measures are effective, the problems they're aimed at solving are often don't materialize, thereby making them virtually invisible. So it's up to us to make the work that we're doing visible. And the media is our tool for doing so. And this is a quote that I really like from Larry Wallach, who's a media advocacy guru. He used to be across the bridge in Berkeley, but now he's up at Portland. And he writes, "We, and we is all of us in this room, we are public health advocates. We have to explain. Our opponents just have to state. We need to change people's minds. They just need to reinforce what people already think. We need to emphasize shared responsibility. They just need to highlight personal choice." So this is what we're up against. We're up against a dominant paradigm that runs counter to the work that we're trying to do. And this is how issues are traditionally framed in media. This is a narrow portrait lens of an event. Kind of, yes, it is fuzzy. But, you know, a nice scene of some kids playing baseball, right? Little League. But this is what we want to do. We want to tell the bigger story. We literally want to pull the frame apart. And we want to talk about the external context for what is happening. Because when we look at this picture, the story is much different than over here. You know, now we're talking about asthma and why is this the only place these children have to play. So that's what we can do when we make effective use of the media. Part of what Prevention Institute does is we run two rapid response media networks, one on food and activity and one broadly on health reform and community prevention, where have staff that on a daily basis, they're analyzing the news coverage on these issues. And we're looking at how the conversation, you know, what is being discussed and what isn't being discussed. How can we insert public health into the conversation? What are opportunities to reinforce positive messages and frames? And what are opportunities to correct what is happening? And so this, I'll share the link to sign up for this, but it's free to sign up and you get, you know, at most you might get a weekly alert from us and we offer talking points to help, and we link to the stories, to the coverage, and then we offer talking points to help you respond, as well as links to studies and data that support public health messages. So I'm going to share some of the kinds of messaging that we think is really helpful in telling this larger story. I can already tell that I'm going to go over. Does it make it better if I acknowledge that I'm going to go over by a few minutes? I did it this morning too. All right, few minutes. So one of the biggest messages that we really need to feel comfortable relying on is the fact that fundamentally prevention saves lives. And it would be great if we could just stop there, if we didn't even have to go further and say, oh, okay, and it saves, you know, it saves money too. But we shouldn't forget to point out that, as Dr. Grotto pointed out, that chronic disease is largely preventable. You know, we don't have to have children suffering from type 2 diabetes. You know, that is a societal decision we have made to allow that circumstance to continue to perpetuate itself. We can, if we so choose, if we have the political will, we can intervene and we can address that. So really reminding the public and decision makers that, you know what? Many of the things that impair the quality of life the most and that cost our healthcare system the most, we can prevent those, is a really powerful message. We know that, but not everyone out there knows that. And we're fortunate also to actually have some economic models that also show that, you know, hey, what? This is actually cost effective too. We save money when we prevent chronic disease from happening as opposed to treating it after the fact. So this is from Trust for America's Health and Prevention Institute, worked with them back in 2008 to develop this economic model that shows that for every dollar that you invest in prevention per person per year, after 5 years, you get $5.60 back on that investment. So if we invested $10 per person per year, we'd get $16 billion in annual savings in 5 years. As public health folks, we have a lot of data, and we need to use that data judiciously. There's a lot of coverage right now about public health work that is framed as if the strategies that are being used today aren't based on any kind of solid evidence base. So really being able to point out that yes, in fact, there is research to show that if you improve environments where people live, if you improve school food environments, if you improve workplace environments, that does have an impact on behavior, which in turn does have an impact on health outcomes, is an important key message. And that we know that there are certain strategies that have worked well and continue to work well. And why wouldn't we continue to invest in what works? In fact, we can't afford not to do this. There's a lot of polling data, and for those that are interested, I can share some of my slides from this morning, that show that there is very strong public support for community prevention, for efforts to address what's happening in neighborhoods, for efforts to address what's happening in schools. And 73% of the American public overall backs these kinds of efforts, and they even support them when we're talking about taxing junk food or taxing sugar-sweetened beverages. It goes down to 61% support, but there's still really, really high support. And this is irrespective of political ideology and geography in the United States. So, you know, fundamentally, prevention in the first place makes sense to the public because it's what they would want for themselves. This one is really important. A big criticism about federal investment in prevention work is that it's too much government involvement. You know, it's nanny states, it's government overreach. You know, why is the federal government deciding what should or shouldn't happen? So really being able to clearly articulate what the local benefits are of these investments and of these work, and to point out that when there's a federal investment in prevention, what those dollars do is that they allow local leaders, local residents, to come together and decide for themselves what health problems are they going to solve and how are they going to solve those, you know. What other community stakeholders are they going to involve? Yes, everyone may be working on addressing the food environment, but people are going to be doing it from slightly different perspectives, and those perspectives are going to be based on local needs. So this is a really, really important message, and one that, you know, is easily forgotten. This is just an example of a tool that Prevention Institute has that shows some examples of really local community prevention work that you guys can use. The fact that prevention is good for business is particularly important right now, and it's important to talk about it in two ways. It has has a direct impact on business, particularly small business, that have fewer employees and are therefore going to be more harmed by the fact that their employees may not be as productive or may be taking a lot of sick days. So workplace wellness programs have a direct impact on businesses. They, you know, reduce healthcare costs. Right now, businesses in the U.S. are spending about $73 billion on preventable chronic conditions. Like that's the cost borne by businesses. The other side to the story is the fact that larger businesses are now making decisions about where they're going to locate based on the health of the surrounding community. And there are states that are actually working to improve the health of their residents because they've been told that if they don't, certain businesses aren't going to open there. So we have a great opportunity to make this link between community prevention and the interests of business, which kind of plays really well to the kind of, you know, political messages that we're hearing today. We'll skip this quote. So I alluded to this a little bit. I mean, everyone here that has been, if you've been around over the past 2 years, you know that government in general has a pretty bad reputation right now, and people are pretty disenchanted with what government can and can't do. And a lot of the ways that that's being framed in the media is kind of questioning, does government have a role and responsibility in protecting health, or should it really be up to individuals? Is this really just about individual responsibility? And now we've totally gone off the deep end as a country by expecting government to do certain things for us. So it is up to us to make visible the role of government and to remind people of all the things that we take for granted. You know, restaurant inspections, that's government. Like, we wouldn't want to eat at a restaurant that hasn't been inspected. You know, we wouldn't want to drink water that hasn't been, you know, properly treated or that isn't being, you know, regularly tested. We wouldn't want to go back to the time when it was, allowable to sit your infant on your lap in the front seat while you were driving down the freeway. But these are all, we wouldn't want to put lead back in paint or gasoline. These are all government policies that protect our health, but they're also ones that we take for granted, so we don't even think about them anymore. But we need to remind, you know, ourselves and the public and decision makers that in fact the kinds of initiatives we're working on today, they're no different than any of these, you know, larger scale public health examples. It's just that we've forgotten about them. And then I think, you know, the central message is that if we really want health reform, if we really want, I'm doing fine on time. I won't take more than 5 minutes. If we want to be a healthier, more prosperous, more equitable nation, then we really have to. We can't do that if we don't invest in prevention in the first place. And we all deserve these kinds of investments because we're all going to benefit from it. So just really quickly, this comes from our colleagues at Berkeley Media Studies Group. This is the kind of recipe that we use when we're framing issues. So when we define the problem that we're approaching, we define it from an environmental context. So we talk about, you know, we don't talk about individuals. We talk about what's wrong with the environment. Why were those little kids playing outside of, you know, a power plant? Like, what's wrong with that environment? And when we talk about why it matters, we use values. You know, values may be equity and fairness or justice, or health in and of itself is a value. or, you know, prevention or ingenuity. Like, we know how to solve these problems. And then we really focus on what the solution is. One of the mistakes we make as public health professionals is we talk about the problem a lot, and then we kind of forget to mention, well, how are we going to solve this problem? Do you have a specific policy that you want to put forth? Like, what is your solution to the problem? And that gives us that broader, that landscape frame that we want to have. And so, just quickly, some of the elements that make for a strong message, again, are cueing the environment. This is not about individuals being irresponsible. It's about environments that don't support our health. Linking it to values. You know, it's okay to state values. Like, we don't have to be just really neutral and professional. Focusing on solutions, really emphasizing and reflecting what the local impact is of the work, if at all possible. Including co-benefits right now, including co-benefits to business is probably a really smart idea, but including co-benefits to whichever strong stakeholder group is relevant, is important. And then figuring out how you can use real people and stories to reflect the population impact. Not to make this into an individual issue, but to really to show how people are benefiting from the community-wide or system-wide policy change that that you've championed. Okay, it always does is on the slide. So these are the shorter links, but more complicated. If you want to join the two rapid response networks, probably the easiest way is if you send me an email, and I'd be happy to sign you up. And look forward to taking your questions. Thank you.